Morning.
Oh, body. I feel like something's not right.
I feel like it's on backwards or something.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it normally looks.
No, I know. I don't know. Don't matter.
Oh,
what
well.
A ball, eh? Yeah, we're going to have to get through this glitchy part.
Yeah. Glitch.
Just carry on talking until the glitch is gone.
That's it.
Yeah, done.
Yeah, cars.
I'm over it. I just want to, I'm just going to, you know, get a horse. Horse and cart it everywhere, I think.
I like the idea of that.
Yeah.
Although I haven't really got enough space for a horse, so maybe I'll just get a Shetland.
Yeah.
But then I'll feel bad about, like, trying to ride a Shetland with my bulk. So maybe I'll just still walk everywhere. I'll just be walking to Shetland.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll just have another expense.
Yeah. Yeah.
God's sake.
Oh, so yeah. Annoying.
What a ball ache. And what, I can't even believe Claire's.
Oh.
Can't even believe that.
Yeah, I know. 3 years old.
Yeah,
not
I know.
Even 3 years old.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. They don't make anything to last nowadays, though, do they?
No.
They make it with the intention of you're going to need to get a new one in like a couple of years' time or whatever.
Yeah. But I'm looking at buying new car, not new cars, but secondhand cars. And you think, oh, it's going to come with all these issues. But then I think, oh, I've dropped my biscuit again.
Oh, you haven't learned.
It's floating, but it's...
Burn yourself.
I've got it. God's sake.
Yeah. Yeah, more importantly, save the biscuit.
Oh, God.
Oh, no. Dropped it in your lap. Oh. I mean, if none of our listeners watch the YouTube videos as well, honestly, guys, you're missing out.
Yeah, I'm here for entertainment purposes.
Yeah,
so about buying a secondhand car, and they're going to come with all these issues. And then I thought, even if I buy a new car, there's no guarantee it's not going to have any fucking issues, is it?
Yep. No, honestly, Claire's been saying exactly the same thing. She's been saying two things. One is sell your Mercedes because you don't need two cars. And I'm like, yes, but I might. And I love the Mercedes. And the other thing that she's been saying is for the amount of miles that we do, that I shouldn't keep buying like secondhand cars. I should just get a new car so that it's reliable and I can trust it and all the rest of it. But literally everyone I know is having issues with their cars, whether they're new cars or secondhand cars. And it's like, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Shall we crack on? I don't have a random blam.
Random blams, go.
I just literally just said I don't have one. What are you doing? All right, random blam for you. Ants don't have lungs.
Oh.
Yeah, how about that?
Wow. Our lives are enriched for knowing that.
Do not have lungs.
What is it? Oh, so they just don't breathe?
That is my extent of the knowledge of ants. But I will have a little look while you tell your blam.
A bit like my potatoes in space, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just that blam. My blam is about chameleons, and it is there are more than 200 chameleon species.
Wow.
Oh, over 200 different species. I used to have personal random blam. I used to have a chameleon called Monkey, and she was a rescue chameleon because she was put in a very shallow, like, vivarium. And with a heat lamp, so she couldn't get away from the heat lamp.
Oh,
and,
gosh.
And she got burned for the heat lamp because they need, like, they need tall spaces.
Yeah.
So that, you know, they can go up and they can warm themselves under the heat lamp, and then they can move away from it when they choose. Yeah, Monkey couldn't. So
she sat next to a radiator constantly.
Yeah, exactly. So she was really, like, she had quite bad scarring and that. But honestly, one of the best pets that I've ever had in my life.
Including the sheep.
Yeah. I mean, all of my pets have been amazing, but yeah, as far as that kind of animal or that kind of pet, yeah, brilliant. I've never had like lizards and snakes and things like that. That's always been my sister. But yeah, monkey, oh, I loved her. She was lovely. What a lovely girl. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I've figured out, I haven't figured it out. I Googled it.
Oh, okay.
Ants don't have lungs due to their small size. Ants don't have the room to accommodate a complex respiratory system such as ours. Instead, they have their own ways of respiration to help transport oxygen around their bodies.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yep.
Oh, well, that? To all our ant listeners, well done.
Yep.
Good job.
Random Lambs down.
Done. I'm excited about this episode.
Oh my God, me too. Right. So every episode that I do, I start writing it and then I get proper into it and I go, oh, I'm so excited for this episode. I'm so excited to tell everybody about this episode. And I go to Josie, I'm so excited for you to hear this episode. I get so excited about like doing them.
Well, you love what you do.
Yeah, this one, I started writing it. I had a full plan of how, like, start, middle, and end. I say a plan like I've made it up. I haven't. But as I was writing it, I was like, this needs to be a two-parter.
Ooh.
So I have separated into two parts. And my plan was to get both parts done so that they could come out together. However, couldn't. So, unfortunately, you will have to wait a week for it to come out, if you're listening to it as it come out. If you're listening to it and it's a really old episode, then listen to the next one straight away. Sorted.
Knock yourself out. Yeah. At this point in time, I have no idea what the story is or if I'm going to be okay to wait a week to hear part two. I might have to hassle you continuously. Be like, just tell me.
Yeah.
I'm not patient.
So, without further ado.
Roll the titles. Morning.
Morning.
Morning, morning. Morning, actually, morning. So they get two mornings for this one.
Well, have we done morning already?
Yeah.
Morning then. Good morning.
Morning, morning. Three. Morning, morning, everyone.
Yeah. Before we start the episode, I just want to hand out a big thank you to all of our listeners, old and new. We've had quite a lot of new listeners recently. So whether you've jumped in straight at this episode or straight at your the Brian Cohey Jr. episode or just another episode, because sometimes I find a podcast and I just pick episodes that I think that I'll like. Instead of going from one upwards,
yeah.
I go, that one sounds good. I'll listen to that one. So,
do you know the first episode that my dad listened to? He said, "Oh, I listened to your radio show."
Mm. Oh,
I went, "Oh," I said, "Oh, thanks, Dad." And he went, "Yeah, yeah." He said it was. He said, "Oh, it was really good. I really liked it, really enjoyed it." And I said, "Oh, that's brilliant." I said, do you know which episode it was that you listened to? Have a guess what one it was.
The monkey one.
Matthew Shepherd.
No, for God's sake.
I was like, oh, sorry, Dad.
I thought we would have gone for a light. He listened to your rant.
Yeah. I said, do you know what? I said, in all fairness, Dad, I don't kick off like that in every episode. So please listen to others where I'm less sweary. Yeah. He was like, no, I thought it was really good. Really good. I was like, oh, thanks, Dad.
Oh, bless him.
Yeah.
Oh, bless him.
Yeah, so that was Dad's first experience. So I apologise if that's anyone else's first experience. I don't normally kick off like that. And now I've learnt my lesson, so I try and stay away from those kind of situations or at least mute myself.
Uh-huh. Well, this one is not a kicky off one. It's It's not a kick. Well, it infuriated me a small bit, but not a kicky off one.
Am I likely to kick off?
I don't think you'll kick off, but I think you'll have a thing to say about it.
Okay.
I think you'll have something to say. So, take another mouthful of my coffee and then we'll go.
Me too.
So, Nicholas Patrick Barclay was born on December 31st, 1980. He was the youngest of three and being raised by a single mum. He had two half siblings that were much older than him and they lived their own lives. So it was just Nicholas and his mum, Beverly, and they lived in San Antonio, Texas. At 13 years old, Nicholas was living with his high-functioning heroin-addicted mum.
Oh.
She worked seven nights a week at the local Dunkin' Donuts to be able to provide for her addiction and for Nicholas. Everyone said that she was a high-functioning heroin addict. You wouldn't have known it. She was perfectly able to look after Nicholas, and she loved him with all her heart. She had two other older children, but Nicholas was her baby.
Yeah.
But that didn't stop Nicholas from becoming a bit of a troubled teen. He was this dainty, angel-faced, blonde-haired, blue-eyed little boy, but he was a little bit hard to handle. He was often expelled from school and wandering the streets, and the police had been called multiple times to their home because of alleged assaults on Beverly. Mm. And she admitted openly that she couldn't handle him. And teachers at school had actually reported Beverly to CPS, Child Protective Services, as they said that Nicholas was always coming to school covered in bruises and hungry. But just barely a teenager, Nicholas had three homemade tattoos and a criminal record for breaking and entering, stealing and truancy. Beverly said he was 13 going on 30. As a result of Nicholas's wild behaviour, Beverly had actually asked her oldest son, Jason, who was 20, I think perhaps 27 or 24, I can't remember his age. She had asked Jason to come and stay with them so that he could help with his brother. However, Jason wasn't much of a role model. He was also a drug addict. And this next part varies slightly in its sources, but I believe I've got the correct information. On the 10th of June, 1994, Nicholas Barclay spoke to his mother in the morning. She gave him $5 and he left the house to go and play at the basketball court with the instructions that he needed to be back home for dinner. And later that day, Nicholas rang home from a payphone to say that he was finished playing and that he wanted a lift home from his mum. But it was Jason that answered the phone. And he told Nicholas that their mum was asleep. She worked nights, so she was often asleep in the day. And Jason wasn't prepared to wake her up. So he told Nicholas that he needed to walk home. The basketball courts were only sort of 1 or 2 miles away, so it wasn't far. So he said Nicholas needed to walk home. But Nicholas never made it home. It would take 3 days for his mum to contact the police and report him missing.
What?
And they believed that he had run away. It wasn't the first time. His mum described him as being street smart and assumed that he would come home when he was ready. So they assumed that he was trying to evade his upcoming court appearance because Nicholas was due in court on the 14th of June on breaking and entering charges. And it was believed that he would be taken away from his home and placed in a group home, which he expressed that he absolutely did not want that. So naturally, his mum thought that he was trying to keep a low profile and hide until that court date had passed. So that's where the confusion is. People believe that he actually went missing on the 13th, but that was actually the day that he was reported missing.
Right.
So police gave out a description of him. He was very small for his age. He was 4'8" and he weighed 80 pounds. Oh. He was lost. He was a really, really delicate. Yeah, really, really cute looking little boy. He was last seen wearing a white t-shirt, purple trousers and carrying a pink backpack. So he would have stood out. He didn't kind of blend in. But Beverly thought that perhaps Nicholas had gotten into a car with a stranger for a ride home. He had been diagnosed with ADD and she said that he was naturally trusting of strangers. So she wouldn't have put it past him to have tried to cop a lift home. Beverly said that his disappearance didn't make the news. it didn't get any media attention and no one took it seriously because of his background, because he was a previous runaway and because he was a naughty child. But the weeks and months went by with no clue as to where Nicholas was, until out of the blue, in the middle of September, Nicholas's brother Jason called the police to say that he had spotted Nicholas trying to break into their garage. However, when the police arrived, there was no sign of Nicholas and there was no sign of any attempted break-in. And that was the only sighting of Nicholas. The months and years went by and the family resigned themselves to believing that he had come into contact with someone and he had come into harm. You know, that they assumed that he'd been dead. And they thought that for 3 long years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
On October the 7th, 1997, a police officer from San Antonio Police Station received a phone call from an officer in Linares, Spain. And he introduced himself as Officer Jonathan Dorian. He said that he had a teenage boy that had been found wandering the streets. And the boy hadn't really spoken much to them as he was very frightened. But he had eventually disclosed his name. He said his name was Nicholas Barkley. He told the officer in Texas that after Nicholas had been questioned, he would be held at a hostel for homeless youths. And he then gave the officer in San Antonio the contact number in case she wanted to contact him. So Beverly was informed that her son was actually alive and residing at this hostel in Spain. And as you can imagine, she was speechless. She had a million questions, but her main priority was to find out how she could bring him home. But she couldn't believe it was real until she spoke to him. After multiple attempts of trying to reach Officer Dorian at the shelter and getting only Spanish-speaking people, she eventually let Carrie, which was Nicholas's older sister, attempt the phone call to the shelter. And on her first try, Carrie called the hostel and Officer Dorian answered the phone. He spoke in a very heavy French accent and he explained to Carrie how Nicholas had come to them and that he actually had Nicholas sat next to him at that time. So he passed the phone over to Nicholas, and for the first time in 3 years, Carrie was able to speak to her little brother, and she said, "My God, Nicky, is that you?" And after a long silence, the teenager replied in a quiet, shy voice, "Yes, it's me." And he didn't say much else on the call to Carrie, but he ended it by begging her to take him home. The family were in shock at the sudden appearance of Nicholas, and Beverly had never flown before and she was actually terrified of flying. And Carrie as well didn't think that Beverly would be able to make that long journey. She had never recovered from the fact that Nicholas had been abducted, or, you know, that they thought that he was dead. So she'd actually started using drugs more frequently. So she wasn't doing very well. So it was decided that Carrie would fly over to Spain to collect Nicholas and to bring him home. And the packing and shipping company that she worked for actually managed to get the money together to pay for her flight. And she arrived in Spain a week later. And when Carrie arrived, she saw her teenage brother before her. He had grown in the 3 years since she had last seen him, but his nose was still the same. She recalled telling him that he had the same nose as their uncle Pat. And he was obviously wearing someone else's clothes because they were far too big for him. And he looked as though he wanted to blend into the background. So he was wearing a baseball cap pulled low over his face, a scarf wrapped tightly around his mouth and his chin, and dark sunglasses. And the detectives told Carrie that Nicholas had revealed that once he'd been abducted, he had been taken all over Europe by a military sex ring where he had suffered horrendously, and that he didn't really remember much of his life before that. So it was no wonder that he appeared terrified. So Carrie approached her younger brother and she didn't hesitate. She took him straight into her arms. But there was some legal paperwork that had to be granted before he could fly back to America. So while they waited, Carrie took her younger brother into a side room where she sat with him and she spoke to him about all the things that had happened since he'd been gone. And she brought some family photos for him to look at. And as he reached out to take one, she saw the small cross tattoo that he had on his hand between his thumb and his forefinger. And she remembered the story of how he'd come home with that silly little tattoo and how she'd kind of berated him for being so stupid and getting that tattoo. And while they were looking at photographs together, Nicholas remarked that their mum looked the same, but had gained a little bit of weight. He asked her if their grandfather was still an asshole, and he said about how much he missed his grandmother. He spoke quietly with an accent unlike his Texan one that he'd had all of his life, but he declined to answer any questions about what had happened to him, and Carrie didn't really want him to have to explain himself. He'd been through a horrendous ordeal, and she was sure that he would open up when he was ready. So she just wanted to take him home. But before Nicholas was allowed back to the United States, immigration said that he needed a passport and that he needed to prove that he was an American citizen. So with the help of FBI Special Agent Nancy Fisher, who worked at the Center for Missing and Exploited Children, she was able to organize an emergency passport for Nicholas so that he could return home. But Nicholas would just need to answer a few questions. So in front of a judge, he was shown five photos of different family members and was asked to identify them all. And Nicholas answered one by one all of these questions and correctly identified four out of the five family members. And he'd got the last one wrong, sort of stumbling over his words and kind of saying, you know, I don't really remember who this person is.
Mm.
And Carrie stood in front of the judge and swore under oath that this boy was her teenage brother. So he was granted a passport and citizenship and allowed to fly back home where his family would eagerly awaiting him. He was told that when he was back in America, he would need to give a statement to Nancy Fisher about what had happened to him so that it could be fully investigated and then potentially help all the other children that had been involved in this military sex ring as well.
Hmm.
And while on the plane from Spain back to Texas, Carrie said she remembers Nicholas panicking, and he explained that he was just terrified that the plane was going to crash. So Carrie consoled her little brother, but he'd always been so brave and so strong and so strong-minded, and it kind of broke her heart to see him so frightened and so panicked.
Hmm.
On October the 18th, Nicholas Barclay arrived back in America. Waiting for him, he recognised, were his mother and Carrie's husband and their two children, who were his niece and nephew. The only person that was not there to meet him when he got off the plane was his older brother, Jason. Nicholas's disappearance had been exceptionally hard on him because he had been the one to say to Nicholas, walk home. Mum's not going to pick you up. So he'd taken the blame really for what had happened to him. And so he'd started taking cocaine quite frequently, and he'd ended up in a rehabilitation center. And while he was at that rehabilitation center, he'd done quite well for himself, and he ended up staying there and kind of working to rehabilitate others.
Hmm.
So he wasn't around when his brother landed back home in America. But Beverly was there, and she stared at her son, bundled up in baggy clothing, shoulders kind of hunched over. He was wearing gloves. He was wearing a hat that covered his blonde hair and dark sunglasses that covered his blue eyes. The reunion was, as you can imagine, emotional for everybody. And there's a video that one of the family members had taken of Nicholas getting off, you know, like the little walkway bit as you come off the ramp with your luggage and stuff. And as he comes around the corner, and everyone is just over the moon to have Nicholas back. But Beverly saw her son and how covered up he was, and was just so saddened to think about everything that her son must have been through for him to appear this way.
Mm.
And he was like a shell of his former self. So she kind of hung back a little bit while everybody greeted Nicholas, but she eventually embraced him. She walked up to him and she gave him a really big cuddle, and she felt him stiffen at the contact, and she let go. She was like, you know, like I said, heartbroken. Her usually warm and loving son was now cold and distant, and it just broke her heart all over again.
Yeah.
On the drive home, Nicholas sat in the back next to his mother and he was chatting to his cousin, who was actually quite a similar age to him. And his cousin was 14. So Nicholas was 16 at the time. And Nicholas spoke about missing school and about missing his friends. And they stopped at McDonald's to get some food before it was decided that Nicholas was going to stay with Carrie and her husband instead of going back to his mum. And the reason for that was because Beverly worked nights still and she didn't want him to be left alone overnight and when, while she was asleep during the day. So Nicholas stayed with Carrie and he slept on a mattress on the floor of her son's bedroom. He was enrolled in the local high school and he started to try and regain his life, just some sort of normal routine again. And he acted like a normal teenager. He hung out with his cousin at the local skate park after school. He got the bus to and from school every day. And he actually started seeing a fellow classmate called Amy. And Carrie said that they used to phone each other a lot. And he, whenever they questioned him about her, he would get all embarrassed and shy. And but he never talked about his experience during his abduction. And the family never pressed him. But true to her word, Nancy Fisher requested an interview with Nicholas to investigate his abduction. So on the 4th of November, 1977, a few weeks after he'd landed back in America, Nicholas Barclay went to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children in San Antonio, Texas. He sat across the desk from Nancy. He wore his hat pulled down low, but Nancy could still see his face, and she said that he looked nervous and uncomfortable. So she told him that the interview was so that his abductors could be brought to justice. Anything that he could provide her, any information that he had, would help bring these people to justice and help other people, other boys that were in his situation as well. And he appeared incredibly nervous, but nevertheless, he recanted his story. So on June 10th, he had been abducted by two men at the basketball courts. They'd approached him, and before he knew what was happening, they'd put a cloth with chloroform over his mouth and had taken him into a van where he had passed out. He was then taken by military aircraft overseas and frequently moved across different European countries to be used in a paedophile sex trade. And the men there that were abusing everybody were high-ranking military and were of Mexican, European, and American backgrounds. He would be kept in a dark room with many other children where they would be drugged, chloroformed, and raped every night. He had been tortured. He had had his right hand broken with a baseball bat. All of the fingers on his hands had been broken. His left foot had been broken with a crowbar. And he was frequently burnt and given insects to eat. He said headphones would be placed on his head and he would have to listen to screaming and shouting in different languages for hours on end. You know, like military tactics to break
That stress test.
Stress test, nails on a board and just horrendous things that he would have to listen to. And he would have to listen to a Spanish voice saying over and over, "You are not you." And he said that he was experimented on. Needles were inserted into his eyes and injected with a dye to change his eye colour from bright blue that it used to be to a dull brown. And this was so that nobody would recognise them. They tried to change his appearance as much as they could so that nobody would recognise who he was. If he was caught speaking English, he would be beaten. He was forced to speak different languages for 3 years, and he now spoke with a heavy French accent. He said that he'd managed to escape purely because the door to the room was that he had been kept in, it hadn't been shut properly, and he had seen it, and he had managed to run out and into a big hallway and then through another door, and then eventually made his way outside. And once outside, he said he literally ran for his life. He ran and he ran, and then he wandered the streets for hours before realizing that he actually was in Spain. And Nancy was horrified by this story. You can imagine, you know, listening to this horrendous tale of all these things that he'd been through. And she promised Nicholas that she would do her absolute best to bring justice to those that had harmed him. And Nancy advised the family that it would be a good idea to refrain from any media interviews because she didn't want it attracting attention to the case and then hindering it. So she didn't want these military officials to find out they were being investigated and then for them to, you know, up and leave or whatever, or to do harm to any of the boys that they were keeping hostage.
Yeah.
So Nicholas went back to his life and tried to carry on as normal. And it seemed that Nicholas went right back to his old habits of getting into trouble. A few weeks after returning, he stole Carrie's car and then went on a road trip. And he ended up getting caught speeding in Oklahoma. My knowledge of America is shocking, so I don't know where Oklahoma is in terms of San Antonio. But for those that do, that's where he ended up. So he was caught speeding by local police. But they agreed not to prosecute him or not to do any charges because of everything that he'd been through.
Yeah.
He was also getting kind of kicked out from school as well. Like he was being suspended for periods of time because he just was acting up. But his family excused his troublesome behavior because of what he'd been through. And they blamed it on this horrifying abuse that he'd suffered because, of course, he would be acting out after everything that he'd been through.
Yeah.
6 weeks after Nicholas had arrived back, it was finally time to meet his older brother. Jason was now out of rehab and doing really well for himself, and a family barbecue had been organized for this special occasion. However, the emotional reunion that everyone had anticipated never happened. Jason saw, as soon as he saw Nicholas, he kind of regarded him in this standoffish manner. He refused to hug him and kind of regarded him as a stranger. Whether that was because he'd blamed himself all these years and had kind of dealt with the fact that he thought Nicholas was dead, I don't know. But after a few minutes, while the rest of the family kind of spoke amongst themselves, Jason motioned for Nicholas to go outside with him so they could talk in private. And once alone, Jason handed Nicholas something. It was a gold chain with a cross on it. And Nicholas stared at this object in his hand for a moment before Jason simply said, "Good luck," and then walked back into the house, leaving Nicholas speechless and confused. By now, Nicholas's surprise return had attracted the attention of the media. So there was a television show called Hard Copy, and they had gotten wind of this story, you know, this boy that had gone missing 3 years prior and had turned up in Spain. It's a good story for the media to cover. And they wanted to air it on their show. So they needed to find the family's location. So they hired a private investigator, Charlie Parker. Charlie Parker was a no-nonsense type guy. He had seen it all. He had heard it all. His specialism was to investigate kidnappings. So he'd come into contact with some bad guys. Like, he was a tough guy, Charlie Parker. And it didn't take him long at all to track down Nicholas and his family. And Carrie at first was reluctant for Nicholas to do the interview. You know, the FBI agent, Nancy Fisher, had specifically told them not to do any TV interviews as it could hinder the investigation. But Nicholas agreed. The camera crew arrived at Beverly's house, and Nicholas sat in the armchair across from the interviewer with a camera crew spread out around the living room. He wore a large rimmed fedora style hat, really big, like tan coloured fedora style hat, dark sunglasses and a leather tan jacket. He was mic'd up and he was kind of waiting for his interview. And Charlie Parker was there and he hung out behind the cameras, watching through the camera as the interviewer asked Nicholas about the horrific abuse that he'd suffered. And she asked him if he had been raped every night.
Oh,
and he kind of does this little laugh. He kind of goes, "Oh, no." And he says that there were other boys there that were the favourites and they were the ones that were being raped every night.
Goodness.
And that little laugh that he'd done, kind of, it caught Charlie off guard. He didn't like Nicholas's demeanor. And as he watched Nicholas through the lens of this camera, He noticed a picture of the 13-year-old Nicholas before he went missing, taped to the board where the camera was positioned, so right where he was standing. And he looked at the picture of the blonde-haired, blue-eyed little boy pinned to this board. And then he looked through the camera lens to the boy that sat in the chair before him. The stark difference between the two was horrifying. And his gut told him that the person sat in that chair in front of him was not Nicholas Barkley.
What?
The person sat across from him had dark brown eyes, the shadow of a dark beard appearing on his face, dark eyebrows, and a thick French accent. The story of dye being injected into his eyes to turn them brown and of how he was only allowed to speak in a foreign language did not wash with Charlie Parker. So he asked the family for a picture of Nicholas, and he was specifically looking for a photo that would show his ears because he remembered reading an article of how Scotland Yard had caught Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassin, James Earl Ray, at Heathrow Airport by comparing a photograph of him, of his ears.
Oh.
So although it changed his appearance, because the ears were so similar, that's how they managed to catch James Earl Ray. So they said ears are like fingerprints. They are unique and they do not change over time. So once the interview was over, Charlie Parker, armed with his photo of the 13-year-old Nicholas, went home and he had this photo of 13-year-old Nicholas and a still of the day's interview of Nicholas that sat in the chair. And he used software on his computer to do a side-by-side analysis. And his gut had been right. There was no match. The ears were as different as night and day.
Goodness.
So his immediate reaction was to call Nancy Fisher. She was investigating the alleged abduction. So she needed to be informed that this person she was investigating was a fraud. So Nancy answered the call with skepticism. She had never heard about comparing people's ears. She told him that the family had accepted him. They had taken him in. He had been living with them for a few months now. So surely they would know if that was not their son or their brother. So who was she to question that? If it wasn't Nicholas, they absolutely would have noticed. So she ended the call, but kind of sat back and then reflected on the interview that she had done with Nicholas a few weeks prior. She had expected a young boy with light hair, light features, and a slim build. And it had kind of struck her as odd that he appeared much older than the teenage boy that she was anticipating.
Mm.
His features were dark. His hair was a dirty blonde colour, and he had evidence of these dark roots coming through. And he spoke in a very heavy French accent. But her investigation into this kidnapping, into this alleged abduction, it was going nowhere. Although Nicholas had recounted all of these horrific details about what had happened to him, there hadn't been anything that had proved useful in finding out who had taken him, who the people running this military sex ring were. Everything that he had said had been very general. There had been no specifics. So Nancy decided that it would be best to fly Nicholas out to Houston to the Children's Hospital to see a forensic psychologist, because the forensic psychologist was an expert in dealing with children that had suffered a trauma. So she thought that perhaps this could help Nicholas remember some other information that he may have blocked out due to the trauma that he had suffered.
Hmm.
But when Nicholas introduced himself to Dr. Bruce Perry, alarm bells started to ring. Dr. Perry sat and listened to Nicholas as he again recounted his kidnapping and his torture at the hands of the paedophile sex ring and all of these horrendous things that had happened to him. The doctor noticed that Nicholas told his story with indifference and without the normal physiological signs and symptoms of someone that had genuinely suffered this sort of trauma. His pupils didn't dilate. He didn't appear agitated. In fact, it was quite the opposite. He appeared somewhat excited to tell his story. And the doctor noticed also that Nicholas was unable to speak a word without his French accent. And that was the most disturbing of all the red flags. After the interview, Dr. Perry phoned Nancy Fisher with his findings. He said that in his expert opinion, there was no way someone that had spent the first 13 years of his life speaking in an American accent could lose it so completely after just 3 years. He said if he had picked up a foreign accent while away in that country, after he'd returned to America, he would have resumed his American accent. So you do, like, when I go back to Essex, I'm much more Essex because you listen, you hear that accent, don't you?
Yeah.
So they're saying that while he's away in all these European countries, he absolutely could have picked up an accent. But once back in America, he would have fallen straight back to this 13 years worth of...
At least a little bit. Not like, not at all, not one single word, not... Yeah, if he'd been, like, kidnapped when he was, like, 2 or 3 or something, and he'd been there, like, 10 years or whatever, you sort of think, believable that he might have lost it, but
It's the same as someone being born in France for 13 years and then coming over to England. They don't lose their French accent. So Dr. Bruce Perry, he told Nancy that there was no way that the person he had just interviewed was Nicholas Barclay. He said the person claiming to be Nicholas had not been raised in an English speaking country. So Nancy went from investigating this possible kidnap of Nicholas Barclay to now investigating Nicholas Barclay. So she phoned Carrie, Nicholas's sister, and actually told her of her suspicions and of what Dr. Perry had said and of what Charlie Parker had found. And she told Carrie that Nicholas could not be her brother and that actually he wasn't even American. And Carrie was due to meet Nicholas at the airport when he'd flown back from Houston. And Nancy advised her not to. She said to Carrie, do not meet this person because, for all we know, he could be a very dangerous individual. And she said, I will meet him at the airport. But she didn't know what his motives was. So she just advised Carrie to stay away from him. But Carrie knew that this person was her little brother. There was no way that he wasn't. So he'd been living in her house for about 3 or 4 months now. She absolutely would have known if this was not Nicholas. So against Nancy Fisher's advice, Carrie went to the airport to pick up her little brother. And she hugged him, gave him this really big embrace and asked about his trip. While Nancy stood off in the distance in disbelief. She hadn't expected to see Carrie there. And she watched this embrace and was really taken aback by it. And she watched as Carrie took Nicholas back home with her. Meanwhile, the private investigator, Charlie Parker, had become obsessed with this person. And, you know, this person that he thought was not Nicholas. And technically, he had done his job already. So his job was to get in contact with Nicholas's family to be able to get an interview for hard copy. That was all. So he started digging deeper and trying to find out every single piece of information he could about Nicholas Barclay and about the family, because he genuinely thought that this person that was supposedly Nicholas Barclay was a terrorist or a spy, because why would someone claim to be someone that they wasn't? So he began following Nicholas. He was sure that this person was just going to attack, like he thought he was going to bomb a place or something. So he's made it his mission to prevent that. At the same time this was going on, Nancy Fisher had sought assistance from the assistant US attorney about what to do, because this was a situation that she had never been in. So they
can't
advised
imagine
her.
Many people would have been in that position. You'd be like, is it? Isn't it? If it is,
she was like,
great.
We've
if
got,
it's not, shit.
We've got this missing boy and he's turned up in Spain and the family have taken him home. However, I believe he's not who he is. So what do I do now?
Yeah.
So they advised her to let Nicholas return home to Kerry, but they said to her that until she could prove that he wasn't who he said he was, there wasn't anything really that she could do. So yeah. She requested a blood sample from Nicholas and from his mother, Beverly. Beverly outright refused. She said, absolutely not am I providing a blood sample to prove that Nicholas is my son. I know Nicholas is my son. How dare you suggest that this boy is not my son? Oh, you know, she was absolutely angered by this. So Beverly laid down on the floor of her hallway and she literally said, you can't lift me. You can't make me go. You cannot force me to get a blood test. And she was right. They couldn't. But to everyone's surprise, Nicholas agreed to get this blood test. So he accompanied Nancy to the clinic. And when he arrived at the clinic, he began to get aggressive and irritated. And he flew off the handle. And he said that the nurses were looking at him as if he was a freak. And, you know, all of these different things that were going on. And he stormed out of the clinic without the blood test. Nicholas's behavior at home, though, had started to become worse. He completely stopped going to school. He was constantly fighting with his nephew, Carrie's son, who he was sharing a bedroom with at the time. Because of all this stress, you know, there's people coming at him from all directions saying, you're not who you are and blah, blah, blah. So he was getting, you know, after what he's been through and now he's getting this, he was getting incredibly frustrated.
Mm.
And in the December, sort of just 2 months after his return, he took a razor blade and he slashed up his face, because he just couldn't handle what was going on. The pressure of the investigation, plus the fact that he knew as well that he was being followed by this private investigator, was just too much for him to handle. You know, he was a 16-year-old boy.
Yeah.
So he was checked into a psychiatric ward at the local hospital and he remained there for a few days until it was deemed that he was no longer a threat to himself. And when he was released, he actually went back to living with his mum, Beverly. Carrie couldn't handle his behaviour. And so she thought it best that he go and stay with his mum. But Nancy Fisher still wasn't done with her investigation. You know, they had refused the blood samples, but she was like, I'm not going to stop there. She took a photo of Nicholas to a forensic artist to compare bone structures. So Nicholas, 13-year-old Nicholas pre-abduction, and then 16-year-old Nicholas post-abduction, and took it to him and he compared the bone structures and features of the two photos. And to her surprise, it brought back more similarities than it did differences.
Oh.
And also, in the middle of, I think it was January or February time, Nicholas Barclay went on TV and agreed to do a lie detector test. So he was questioned live on TV, almost like a Jeremy Kyle type thing.
Yes.
he was questioned live on TV, you know, are you Nicholas Barclay? Did you get abducted? Did you suffer all of these horrendous things? And he passed with flying colours.
Okay. But not where I thought it was going to go.
Nancy and Charlie still were not convinced. And at the beginning of March, Nancy actually managed to get a court order to obtain blood samples from Nicholas. And she also took his fingerprints for good measure and sent them off to Interpol.
Oh.
And by this time, Nicholas had been living with the family for 6 months and Charlie Parker had been tailing him for a while.
Yeah.
He noticed that Nicholas generally slept in late, you know, typical teenager. Yeah. And when he left the house, he acted like a teenager. He would often do like Michael Jackson moves as he was walking down the road, you know, like trying to moonwalk and things like that. But one evening, Charlie received a phone call from Nicholas's mother and she was hysterical, screaming and crying. She said that she'd driven Nicholas past his old school that day and he hadn't remembered it. And she was starting to suspect that perhaps this person was not her son. So Charlie arrived at the house where Nicholas was acting crazy, and he was like freaking out, and Charlie tried to subdue him and calm him down and said, you know, come take a walk with me. And Nicholas agreed to go with Charlie to breakfast. He went to a local diner. And when they arrived at the diner, they sat down at the table. They ordered something to eat. And Charlie told Nicholas about the phone call that he had received from Beverly earlier. He said, this is what your mum thinks. Your mum's called me and said, you know, she's having these suspicions, blah, blah, blah. And he ended the sentence by saying to Nicholas, your mother is very upset with you. Mm. And Nicholas stared at Charlie across the table, and he simply replied, she is not my mother, and you know it.
Holy shit.
Meanwhile, Nancy Fisher had received a phone call from Interpol stating that they had a match on the fingerprints that she had taken from Nicholas. Oh. And they were sending a fax through to her. And she waited eagerly, you know, bouncing up and down with anticipation. And she heard the fax machine fire up, and she was like waiting there, waiting for this black and white image that began to protrude from the mouth of the fax machine. And she just stared at it like in absolute horror. The face staring back at her was not a 16-year-old boy. It was a 23-year-old man. He did not have blonde hair and blue eyes. He had brown hair and brown eyes. He was not American. He was French. And he was not Nicholas Barkley. He was Frederick Pierre Bourdin.
Don't you dare fucking stop. Part one.
End
there.
Of part one.
That's it. I'm done.
You're going to have to wait for part two now.
Are you, a whole week. A whole week. Do you know what? This is fracturing our friendship. So she's got a 20-something-year-old French man living in her house for the last 6 months. What about Nicholas?
You're going to have to wait for part two, mate.
Oh.
Piss it. She stormed off. Bye. Come back, mate.
I can't believe it. A whole week. Son of a bitch.
Yeah. So, sorry, everybody, but I had to be, it had to be like this. It had to be this way.
It had to be this way. Oh.
Sorry.
Oh, man. We've got to wait a whole week now.
Yeah. Well, I hope you enjoyed it anyways.
Well, I did. I just need some kind of conclusion.
You will.
What's the point? What happened to Nicholas? Right.
If you've listened to this and you've got to wait a week, do not Google, please.
Oh.
To all of our listeners, I'm pleading.
Why
with you.
Would you even think that I would do that?
You put your phone down. Just wait for part two. Please do not Google any information. Just
promise,
wait for part two.
We promise, don't we, guys?
Thank you.
We promise.
Thank you, promise.
All right. Well, can we at least like give him a blam to listen to in the meantime until we find out? Right.
Yeah, you can have a blam.
All right. We'll have a blam then, guys. Take our mind off of it.
Yep.
Oh.
And an update, a special update.
And an update, indeed. Make sure you guys listen to the next blam. Because it's going to be good.
All right, that's the end of that episode. And I hope you all enjoyed it. And I'm really looking forward to telling you all part two.
And you're also very sorry for leaving us in this position.
A little bit. I'm a little bit sorry, but not really.
But mostly.
I was so excited writing this, and I'm like, I'm going to end it right here.
God damn it. I know. I felt it coming, and I thought, oh, no, 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 no. Oh, no, no. Don't you do it. And then you did.
Did do it. Did. All right, then. Well, we'll see you next time.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
For putting me in this position. That's good. I can't wait for next week now.
Woo-hoo. All right, then.
All right. Thanks, guys.
See you later.
See you next time. Bye.
If you have enjoyed listening to our episodes, make sure you rate us and leave us a review on whatever platform you are listening.
We absolutely love hearing from you guys. So you can also help support our show by donating to our Buy Me a Coffee link. We will make sure that you get a massive shout out and a big thank you in our next week's episode.
You can also follow us on social media at Perplex Podcasts. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and if you want to see more videos and blooper reels, subscribe to our TikTok and YouTube channels.
You can also email us your stories at perplexpodcasts@gmail.com.
And you can find all the relevant links in the episode descriptions. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
He was then taken by
It was taken by millipedes. I did not see that coming.